Rod's Pulse Podcast number 66, Desire to Learn Interview and New Soul.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back. That is a clip from a song called New Soul by Yael Naim. Not sure if I pronounced that exactly correctly, but she's the Paris-born and Israel-raised singer-songwriter and musician who has really gained a lot of attention from the song, from this song that was played during the ad campaign for the new MacBook Air. So unless you've been hiding under a rock for a couple of months, probably have heard that on TV. I really liked her sound. I was wondering who that was. And lo and behold, I found it on the PodSafe Music Network. So I'm able to share it with you today. So stay tuned at the end of my podcast when I'll play the full song called New Soul by Yael Naim. I also have a link to her album if you're interested in purchasing it. And also a link to the Apple Air ad campaign. TV ad. Now, before I get to my main topic today, I just want to share with you a little story about my recording setup for doing interviews. Now, in the past, I've interviewed usually over the telephone. I interview using Skype. And there is a program I've been using called Hot Recorder to interview using Skype, and for the most part it's worked out okay. I wasn't tremendously happy with the sound quality because it records the sound from my cheap headset boom microphone, but it seemed to be working okay until I was recording an interview and Windows decided to totally corrupt the sound file and I lost the interview. So it's kind of embarrassing to have to do an interview over again, but in this case I had to do it. And I had just purchased a new microphone, mostly with the thought of using it for field recording. But I thought now's the time I better start using it, because even for interviews, because it records using a solid state memory chip. It doesn't go through Windows. It's a dedicated recording device. So this is the first interview recorded using this new method. And the recorder I'm talking about is called the Zoom HR4 Handy Recorder. And I have a link to it on my show notes. It's about $250, and it could be very useful for recording bands, you name it. It's quite flexible, and you can actually use it as instead of an expensive mixer where you can do compression and all kinds of fancy things with the audio, it can record stereo and even four track. It has XLR inputs for microphones. But it has two very, very high quality built-in stereo microphones. So I think you'll appreciate the sound quality. For one, I'm recording my side of the conversation with a high quality studio mic, and the output from, in this case, my Macintosh, the Skype sound from the remote side of the conversation is recorded, both tracks obviously, recorded directly into the Zoom HR4. So I thought I'd just fill you in on my recording setup for doing interviews. So without further ado, let me continue with my show today. And I have the pleasure of interviewing Kenneth Chapman. He's the lead product manager for Desire to Learn. Desire to Learn is a recognized leader in the educational enterprise software market with a suite of applications and services, the main one being their course management system. So I think you'll enjoy the conversation. Desire to Learn seems to have a lot going for it. We also mentioned some other software that you might be interested in as well. So without further ado, here's my interview with Ken Chapman.
Hi, Ken. Thanks so much for agreeing to talk to my podcast audience today. I'm anxious to learn a lot about Desire to Learn. And I wonder if you could just start off by telling me a brief overview of your company and how you came to work with Desire to Learn.
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on here, Rod. It's exciting to have a chance to talk a little bit about Desire to Learn and some of our products. Desire to Learn has been around for, I guess, we're just hitting our 9th year anniversary in the next couple weeks. We were started as an entrepreneurial project out of the University of Waterloo, which is just outside Toronto, and is kind of one of the top technical or computer science-based universities in Canada. And our founder and CEO, John Baker, started putting some courses online for some professors and, you know, started to realize that there was a lot of potential for internet-based learning and course management. So he decided he was going to take his entrepreneurial sort of co-op idea and build it into a full company. So we've been around now for about 9 years, and really in the last six or so have we really started to grow as an organization. The first few years were really just on building the core technology and the core application. About 5 years ago or so, we really started to pick up some large clients, and we focus primarily on larger institutions, entire statewide consortia. For instance, every college and university in Wisconsin is using the Desire to Learn software. And we do that because there's obviously a lot of economies of scale if we're working with large clients. But we also have a very flexible and very customizable set of products. So each campus or even each department or each course can do things in a very different way. You know, if they want to teach differently, if they have different policies they want to implement, or even if they just want simple things like branding or the look and feel to change throughout the application. So it's a nice balance between autonomy and customization and enterprise and the high levels of scalability.
You know, I've talked certainly about one of your competitors. You may have heard of them, called Blackboard. In fact, Blackboard is our learning management system at Thomas Jefferson University. But I just wanted to point out to our audience that your product is a course management system. And I guess one of my main questions for you is, how does your company distinguish your product? What makes it different? What makes it stand out from the competition?
Right. Good question. I think what makes us stand out is not so much on the product. It's a philosophy that governs sort of how we do everything in the company, and that translates into the product. And that's really around client focus. Within the organization, you know, we don't see an enormous push on sales and marketing and really trying to, you know, to drive down people's throats the idea of what's great about Desire to Learn. We really try to partner with our clients. We do an enormous amount of focus groups, of feedback sessions with clients, you know, down to how can we make our training better? What ways can we package our documentation that makes more sense for our clients and they can use that easier? Where can we reduce clicks in the system so that a student can get something done quicker because they're telling us they don't have enough a lot of time in their day and they don't want to spend that in the course management system? So that philosophy of real client collaboration and focus on what our clients are looking for and really their vision for the software is what drives the changes in our product and how we do things. So I think that the key pillars that differentiate us that you'll see in the product are things like usability. That we do a lot of usability testing. We have an entire team that's focused on just doing things like watching how people use the system and where do they click on the wrong link and why and what can we do to better design it so that it's more intuitive.
Yeah, I was going to ask you then, do you come out with new improved versions on an annual basis? Do you have a specific release schedule that you try to follow?
We usually try to do our major releases around the end of February just to coincide with again, our client schedules to have enough of a window to, you know, do some testing, do some pilot courses maybe in the summer, and then go full tilt in the fall. So it usually gives a nice 6-month window. But we're releasing new functionality throughout the year. We typically do maintenance releases or patches every couple months, and we'll see new features and and changing the way some features work throughout the year. Again, just based on client feedback, if they've given us a better way to do things.
You know, working in an IT organization, I'm always interested in some of the more technical aspects. So I'm curious, is it always hosted by the institution, or do you have an ASP plan as well?
We do both. Most of our clients that decide to host themselves would be larger institutions. So usually like the statewide consortia that I was talking about before, you know, places where they have IT staff, they've got that technical and even support wherewithal to manage an enterprise implementation. For those clients that are perhaps a little bit smaller or, you know, just don't want to have the hassle of maintaining the application, they can work with us in our hosting services, and they can get additional services like disaster recovery, for instance, to make sure that all their systems are fully redundant. So we have about a 50-50 split in terms of the number of clients that are self-hosted and hosted with us.
Do you integrate with LDAP or some directory service to make it easy to control authentication and authorization?
Yeah, we'll integrate with LDAP, and we have a basically like a little connector that you can use right out of the box to do that. And we also have a configurable sort of single sign-on object. So if you want to have authentication through another means, if you've got a different third-party system, that can be used to authenticate against Desire to Learn, so you don't have to have redundant administration or accounts to worry about.
Can that also be used like a portal? Like, is it possible to log in and then be able to be directed to not only Desire to Learn but any other products?
Yeah, absolutely. So you could also use the authentication that's happening within Desire to Learn to start gaining access to some other products or some other like you say, portals or systems. We don't like the system to be branded Desire to Learn, so we'll see. For instance, the Ohio State University calls their system Carmen, and that's all you'll see it as is Carmen in their portal page, which logs you into Desire to Learn and a number of other systems. Looks nothing like some of our other clients. So it's nice and customizable that way. And you know, we sort of make sure that our application can fit into whatever ecosystem exists in terms of different systems at whatever client site we're working with.
Now, does that mean that the IT folks at the institution can do the branding, the customization, or does that require your help?
The institution can do that for themselves. And they can do that at multiple levels, too. So the engineering faculty, for instance, if they want a different look and feel and a different experience, they can choose to take a different route than, say, the humanities, if they wish to do that.
Most course management systems or learning management systems that I've seen make it easy for faculty to upload different content, usually PowerPoint or Word document, Excel spreadsheet, or so forth. Are there any other tools that you make available for the faculty to build more interactive learning modules, or do you recommend or support different technologies that might be third-party technologies?
Right. Yeah, we don't necessarily offer too much in the way of authoring interactive content. We think that some other companies and some other products have done that really well, so it's not really one of our distinctive competencies, I guess. We've put more of our emphasis on making sure we can get content from any other application into our system easily, and so that it's easy to manage and it's intuitive to set up and that kind of thing. So we do see a lot of feedback from our clients, though, that they like some authoring tools like Captivate, for instance. You know, where they can record some videos and they can put some context and some text around the what they're doing when they're recording a specific clip, I guess, of a web page or whatever they're doing. So the authoring tools themselves isn't something we focus on as much as having a really solid delivery platform for those.
One thing that my listeners are used to hearing me talk about are some of the newer so-called Web 2.0 type technologies, social media, and I talk about wikis, blogs, and of course, podcasts. Do you have tools built in that make it easy for faculty or students to create wikis or blogs or podcasts?
Yeah, we have a blog tool built right into the system, and we have a very granular, very configurable set of roles and permissions. So you can choose for different roles in the system who is able to blog and who is able to comment on those blog entries and who is able to actually read them or publish them. We have an integration right into iTunes U, so faculty can upload their podcasts, and students can gain access right to any podcasts that have been made available for their course right from Desire to Learn. And we have a number of different clients that are integrating third-party wikis into Desire to Learn right now. I think the ones I hear of most often would be Confluence and MediaWiki. I think MediaWiki is the same one that Wikipedia uses. But we were talking with clients and we were looking at, you know, what's the best way to integrate a wiki into a course management or learning management system, and how can we do that so it's more meaningful in terms of getting the assessment information you want and doing the user tracking to see who's contributing what to the whole wiki. And we never set out to build our own wiki. We never thought that was something we'd want to do, but again, with talking closely with clients and knowing how they sort of wanted to see their ideas for wikis and their courses evolve, it's something that we're looking at in designing our own wiki and really threading that into the whole course design process, you know, from assessment to reporting to actually delivering content itself.
I believe you're coming out with a new ePortfolio module. I know at Jefferson we looked at some standalone ePortfolio applications, and they were very expensive, and you know, we came up with sort of a third-party add-on, which doesn't have all the bells and whistles. But so I know you're excited about your new ePortfolio. What can you tell us about that? And does it include some of the standard features like workflow and so on?
Yeah, we're extremely excited about it. We actually released it a couple weeks ago now, and have already seen some fantastic feedback coming from clients that are starting to pick it up. But what it is our ePortfolio is really meant to bridge that gap between the formal, more structured learning that's happening within a course management system right now and that sort of social networking, you know, highly collaborative space that you see right now primarily with, you know, things like Facebook or MySpace that don't really have a hard educational or academic application. Or at least the lines are obviously blurred when you've got a message about a keg party right in there too. So we wanted to look at the ePortfolio as a nice bridge, you know, in between that spectrum of unstructured and very social and collaborative versus the more traditional and more structured course, something you'd see in a traditional course management system. So the ePortfolio is much more user-centered. You know, an individual that has an ePortfolio account, they integrate that directly in with all of the courses they already have in their Desire to Learn system. So it's a benefit to not having a third-party application. You know, with third-party applications, you lose some of that user experience. If you're working within a course, you're probably going to want to take your course materials and put it in your portfolio, you know, show it to some other people, you know, let people see your achievements, maybe reflect on it. And if you're having to switch from system to system or save the file on your computer and re-upload it, you know, you're not as engaged, you're not as likely to keep using the application. And when we were designing Portfolio, it was something we were really thinking about. You know, why are people using Facebook right now? Not because they're told to, but because it's an engaging application, because they can connect with others.
At Jefferson, for the medical college, we have something called the Dean's Letter, and we would like to use an ePortfolio to collect all this content, but there has to be specific sections where the administration can put in content. Is that allowable? Are there areas in a student's ePortfolio that are only accessible or only, you know, editable by the administration, for example?
Yeah, it can be set up that way. Again, the roles and the permissions that can be applied are very open and configurable. So it's just a matter of setting up a role for an administrator and for students or whoever your ePortfolio owner is, I guess, in that case, so that one can contribute more content to it.
Well, we're almost near the end of our time here. I was wondering if there's anything else that you would like to tell us, anything new. I imagine you're always looking down the pike and seeing what you might be adding in terms of our features and functionality. And anything else you would like to bring to our attention?
Just a couple things, I guess. We recently just released a new web services package, which provides basically an API layer or a programming interface for schools that are implementing our technology to do really deep integrations with our applications. It allows them to build on top of the functionality we already have. So I know the clients are doing things like integrating clicker response systems right into the gradebook in our system. We also just released another version of our learning environment product, which is our course management system. With hundreds of different features that all came motivated from our clients. as well as our learning object repository. We built out a new harvesting framework so we can connect with really any open or free educational resource repository in the world. So there's hundreds of thousands of learning objects now that our clients can get their hands on with basically just a few clicks of the button. So for anyone that is interested in learning a little bit more about Desire to Learn, check out our website. We have some webinars that we run all the time to show off some of the really neat things about our products.
Oh, that's a good point. I'll certainly have the URL to your website in my show notes. Anyway, I want to really thank you for taking the time. I learned a lot about the Desire to Learn, and hopefully my audience will come and check out your site.
Great. Thanks, Rod. Have me back anytime.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview. Please check out my show notes for links to some of the software and of course, the links to the Desire to Learn website. And stay tuned in a few seconds, and I'll be playing the full song New Soul by Yael Naim. And until next time, have a great week.
Please leave Rod feedback at 610-616-2199.
Strange world, hoping I could learn a bit about how to give and take. But since I came here, felt the joy and the fear, finding myself making every possible mistake.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.